You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, riding solo for our Thursday episode, going to be answering your mailbag questions and sharing my top five most anticipated games on the Seahawks 2021 schedule. This episode is brought your way by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. After missing out on the event last year due to the pandemic, the Seahawks will host a smaller-than-normal rookie minicamp this weekend at the VMAC. Among those who is set to participate, 2020 second-round pick Darrell Taylor is expected to see the field after missing all of last season. Obviously, these rookie minicamps are supposed to be geared towards first-year players just entering the league, your draft picks, the undrafted rookies that are signed afterward. This event is made for them, but the NFL does allow exceptions for players who have minimal or no on-field experience. And when you consider Darrell Taylor's situation, he did not accrue a season last year. He was sidelined the entire regular season on the non-football injury list while recovering from surgery to repair a stress fracture in his shin. He obviously fits the criteria, and Seattle will be happy to get him some reps on the field. He didn't actually practice until the week they were preparing for the wild card round against the Rams. I've talked to a few people that thought he might have had a chance to make his NFL debut if the Seahawks would have advanced to the divisional round. Unfortunately, the Rams beat them at Lumen Field and ended the Seahawks season. So we never got to see Taylor on the game field. He didn't play at all the regular season and didn't get a chance in the playoffs. And really one of the most interesting storylines going into this 2021 season is how the Seahawks intend to use Taylor moving forward as we head towards training camp. When he was drafted, Pete Carroll classified him as the ideal Leo defensive end. You can see why. 255, 260 pounds. He's got good burst off the edge, good balance, good flexibility, and bend going around the edge. So when you look from a size and athleticism standpoint, he's the type of player that the Seahawks have preferred at that position. But he also has past experience as a hybrid linebacker in college at Tennessee. His last 2 years for the Volunteers, he was playing more as a 3-4 outside linebacker that certainly rushed off the edge a lot. That was what he primarily did for Tennessee. But he's comfortable dropping back in coverage. He has done it in the past. He has the athleticism to do it as a Bruce Irvin type hybrid. And the Seahawks right now could use a player like that because Bruce Irvin himself is not under contract. He's coming off of multiple knee surgeries. There have been rumors out there that Irvin's going to retire. And KJ Wright, who ended up replacing Bruce Irvin early last season and did a fantastic job at strong side linebacker, he still remains unsigned. Now, maybe they'll end up bringing back either one of those players. I would think that Wright is a much better chance at this point coming back to Seattle. But if neither one of those players is on your 90-man roster heading into training camp, I would think Darrell Taylor would be the most interesting potential replacement because of his prior experience at Tennessee, his size, his athleticism. That is a position that he could play. And Pete Carroll said after the draft that moving him to strong side linebacker could be in consideration. At the end of the day, they've just got to see him on the field to figure these things out, though. They haven't had enough practices to really know where he fits in. I do think there's a better chance that he goes to strong side linebacker than not because of what they have done at the Leo position. They re-signed Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa. We don't know if Alden Smith's going to be available or not with his latest legal issues that came shortly after being signed, but he's on the Seahawks roster right now as well. So they've got a log jam when you add Alton Robinson into that equation as well. They've got a number of possibilities rushing off the edge. Taylor could certainly still fit in that mix, but he would get more snaps if he's playing strong side linebacker. Answers about where Taylor's going to play likely aren't going to be coming out of this minicamp. Teams can only have five tryout players and five exempted veterans on the field to go with draft picks. and undrafted free agent signees. There's probably going to be no more than 25, 30 players in attendance. And these camps are non-contact anyway. You're not going to be seeing them do 11-on-11 and 7-on-7 drills like you would see at training camp. Nonetheless, this is still going to provide an opportunity for Taylor to get some drill work with linebackers as well as the defensive line as this team tries to figure out the best path for him to contribute. I'm not sure that you're going to learn much from these next few days. Really, to me, training camp is where you're going to get an idea what the Seahawks' plan is moving forward with Daryl Taylor, whether he's going to be rushing off the edge or he's going to be playing more of that hybrid role like we saw Bruce Irvin do so well for a number of years for the Seahawks. But it's just going to be nice having him on the field right now, a chance to be able to evaluate him, something they simply did not get to do last year. Simply seeing him in a helmet is going to be a big deal for the Seahawks. And they're hoping now that he's healthy, he can stay healthy and he can add another playmaker to this defense that improved so much in the second half of the 2020 season. When I come back in the second quarter, I'm going to be tackling your questions in our weekly Locked On Seahawks mailbag. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection. Reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Glad to have you listening in. Let's get to our mailbag here, shall we? Bunch of questions here from the 12s, a lot of them being schedule related as expected. First question coming from K95 Sports Tweets. In your opinion, Corbin, what's a sleeper game on Seattle's schedule, an otherwise competitive game that most fans might overlook? Well, I've got a couple games that I think that jumped out to me immediately that we don't really know what the rosters are going to look like later in the season, but I think week 8 against Jacksonville is going to be a lot of fun. I know the Jaguars were 1-15 last year, but they also didn't have Trevor Lawrence. They got a generational talent at quarterback with the number one overall pick. I really believe Trevor Lawrence is going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL in a couple years. I think he has that kind of talent. He has been elite at every level he's played at. I don't know if I'm necessarily sold on Urban Meyer being a great NFL coach. They have made some moves that I liked in free agency. I think most of their draft was pretty solid to go with Trevor Lawrence. So I think that's going to be an improved football team. And what really is going to make it a lot of fun is two of Seattle's previous offensive coordinators are on Jacksonville's coaching staff now. Daryl Bevel is the offensive coordinator, same position he had in Seattle, and Brian Schottenheimer is with him as the passing game coordinator. And obviously he was just replaced this offseason by Shane Waldron as Seattle's new OC. And so you've got those two. You've got Shaquille Griffin now playing on defense after signing a big multi-year deal with Jacksonville to get back to his home state. So there's going to be a lot of crossover flavor in that game. And I think Jacksonville is going to be much more competitive. Certainly that's a game that I think people are overlooking a little bit that I think is going to be quite a bit of fun. And I think the Week 16 game against the Chicago Bears, Justin Fields was one of my top quarterbacks in this draft class. I couldn't believe that he fell all the way down to pick 11 and the Bears traded up and got him. I think that Justin Fields has a chance to be a star in this league. I will be surprised if he is not in the starting lineup by the middle of the season. I expect that he will be under center in that game against the Seahawks. And a player that he has drawn comparisons to by some scouts is Russell Wilson. So you're going to get to see Justin Fields, a dual threat quarterback that can run in the 4-4s. You're going to get to see him going against Russell Wilson on the biggest stage. And it's going to be at Lumen Field. I think that gives the Seahawks an advantage. Certainly the Bears, one of their bigger strengths of their pass rush. You can mitigate that a little bit by playing at home. And they're not going to be able to feed off their crowd at Soldier Field. But nonetheless, I think it's going to be a game that's close. I think Chicago is going to be a team that if Justin Fields gets in there sooner rather than later, I could see Chicago surprising, especially if Aaron Rodgers gets traded out of the NFC North. Chicago might suddenly become the favorite to win that division. Minnesota is obviously going to be a talented team as well. I expect them to bounce back some. Detroit is probably a year or two away from competing in that division. But I think if Green Bay loses Aaron Rodgers, then suddenly those other two teams have a real chance to make some noise, especially if Justin Fields is able to come in and immediately play at a high level, which I think he's capable of doing. So I think the Jacksonville and Chicago games, both at home, are games that are under the radar right now that people aren't talking about, that have a chance to be exciting games for the Seahawks against teams that are going to be better than anticipated. Second question coming from Brian on Facebook. I've seen that the Seahawks have the easiest strength of schedule, according to MGM. What's your take on strength of schedule in general? Well, to be honest, Brian, I think the strength of schedule, it's kind of one of those statistics that really doesn't mean anything to me. That's honestly how I feel about it. Do I reference it sometimes? Absolutely, because there really aren't any other tangible ways to look at the teams that you are going to be playing and trying to gauge, you know, how difficult is this schedule going to be. But the reality is that strength of schedule numbers don't really mean anything because teams change so much from one year to the next. And we've seen in this league how much parity there is and how difficult it is to get back to the postseason year after year. That's why the Seahawks making it 8 of the past 9 years is an incredible accomplishment, because teams just don't make the playoffs that regularly. It's difficult. It's hard to win games in the NFL. And so I always look at the strength of schedule metric, and certainly I'll reference it sometimes, but to me, it's just not that big of a deal. There are going to be teams that did well a year ago that had winning records that are going to fall back a little bit this year. They might have lost some players. There might be some injuries that hit during the season. And strength of schedule doesn't account for any of that. And so, obviously the Seahawks are playing some really good football teams. They have a bunch of 2020 playoff teams on their schedule. And that's the reward that you get, so to speak. That's the reward that you get for finishing first in your division. You're going to be playing number one teams, top teams from other divisions from the prior season. But it's just really difficult to repeat and to get back to the playoffs. And so I just don't put a lot of stock in it. I don't think it's really that important, that big of a deal. Third question here from Tanya Bailey tweets, do you think KJ Wright will be re-signed, and are the Seahawks comfortable going with their current secondary personnel? So first part of that question, I still think that KJ Wright has a good chance of playing in Seattle. I just think the fact now that we are in mid-May and he still hasn't found a job, he clearly hasn't gotten the offer that he hoped he was going to get. And I feel bad for KJ Wright, because I think in a normal offseason, he would have been signed fairly quickly, probably by another team. I don't think the Seahawks would have been able to keep him. I think somebody else would have signed him. But with the salary cap going down to $182.5 million and him being an older player, going to be 32 soon, and the fact he's had a few injuries thrown in there, I just think teams just weren't going to be paying big bucks for players like that, even though he has earned that money. I think last year was the best year of his NFL career, in my opinion. And so I think now that the best odds are him coming back to Seattle. I think at some point he's just going to have to decide, look, I'm not going to be getting anywhere close to the money I hoped I was going to. I want to finish my career in Seattle. They want me back. It's just going to have to be at a price that wasn't desired by me. And I think eventually he will settle there. So unless another team flies in, which of course could still happen, I think that the chance of him coming back to Seattle are pretty high. I like the odds of him returning and playing that Sam linebacker spot. As far as whether they're comfortable or not with the secondary personnel, I think they are comfortable. It kind of goes with what I said about KJ Wright, though. If Richard Sherman continues to be available and they really want to bring him back, I don't think that that has been ruled out to this point. To me, that's the only move they would be making to upgrade the secondary at this point, though. There aren't a lot of veteran corners that are available anyway that would be worth the time of signing. Sherman is the one guy that would make sense. So until he signed, I could still see the Seahawks maybe kicking the tires there, but I do think the group they've got right now, they would be content going into the season with that group. They've got a good blend of experienced veterans and youngsters such as Trey Brown, their fourth round pick. I think they'll be content to go in with that group. If Sherman's available at the right price, and he wants to come back, then I could certainly see number 25 returning to Seattle and finishing his career where it started. So that's one of the more fascinating things to watch here in the next few weeks to see what happens with Richard Sherman. Mark Law tweets, which of the new quarterbacks we face this year is the biggest challenge? I think you've got to go with Trevor Lawrence first. Like I said, I'm in the company that believes he has a chance to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And I know there are plenty of people out there that are like, well, his team lost to Ohio State in the playoffs. So I think Ohio State had the better football team. And that's not knocking Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields can be a star in this league too. And Trey Lance, you could make an argument, might have the highest ceiling of any of those players. Potential can be a dangerous word. They've got to develop him in San Francisco. But my point is, you've got a game late in the year against San Francisco week 14. You've got Justin Fields in week 16. Both those teams, I could see having their rookie quarterback playing by that point, especially the Bears. And you know you're going to be seeing Trevor Lawrence in week 8. So they're going to be playing a lot of rookie quarterbacks. I just think as far as guys that are ready to come in and light it up right away, I think Trevor Lawrence is above everyone else. So I expect that that's going to be a challenging game. I mean, coming to Seattle for the first time is always tough for these rookie quarterbacks, but this is a kid that's calm and composed, not fazed by anything. He's been in the big stage. So I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be a player that could give the Seahawks some issues, especially because they do have some good receivers there. DJ Chark is one of the most underrated receivers. I think now with Trevor Lawrence being quarterback, we might finally see Chark get the attention that he rightfully deserves. So there's going to be some weapons for them to deal with. As I mentioned earlier, that's going to be a fun game when Jacksonville comes out to Seattle on Halloween. Walter Rallari tweets, how big of a challenge will it be playing the 49ers and the Rams in a 5-day span in weeks 4 and 5? To me, that's one of the tougher stretches that the Seahawks have on their schedule. Maybe one of the tougher draws that they got is you got to play against two really good teams in your division in a 5-day span. The only good news is a Thursday night game against the Rams is going to be played at home. So that should be advantageous, especially with fans likely coming back to the stadium. I would expect by that point we could see full capacity by that point. So that's certainly going to help the Seahawks. But you know the 49ers are going to be much healthier. They're going to be full strength most likely in week 4. So you're going to have to deal with them. They're going to be out for blood after a disappointing 2020 season. The Rams want to get back to the top of the division. They just traded for Matthew Stafford. So obviously you're playing two really good teams. That might be the toughest set of games that they have, the toughest pair of games they have on this entire schedule because of the teams they're playing and just how tight that window is in a 5-day span. Devin writes on Facebook, do you think some Seahawks veterans will still show up for voluntary OTAs, or are they all going to stick to their statement about waiting until mandatory minicamp? If you're asking me for my opinion on this, I personally think that most of the veterans will probably stay away, at least for the majority of those voluntary workouts. But I think there will be some veterans that come out and report to get some work in. And it all really revolves around, this is the thing I don't think the NFLPA is understanding. You've got your 20-30% of the league that players that know they're going to be on the roster, players that are established veterans that are stars that don't need these reps. But the vast majority of the players in NFL rosters don't have the luxury of going into a training camp feeling like, you know what, I've got this job sealed in the bank. I'm going to be on this team in week 1, no worries. Most players don't necessarily fall in line there. A lot of these guys, back-end roster players, they're just one or two undrafted players coming in and surprising in training camp away from being off the roster. And so they want to be seen by coaches. They want to get that extra work in. And obviously the rookies, they've never been in an NFL practice before. So they want to be able to get that work on field as well. And so I do think there will be some players that end up, I'm not going to say it's crossing the picket line because they're not on strike, but there will be some players that go against that statement and they do report for some of those voluntary workouts. And they shouldn't be criticized for doing so, especially if they're vaccinated for COVID-19. If they want to go out and get some reps, they should be allowed to do that. I just don't really see the big issue either way. If a player wants to be away for voluntary work, it shouldn't be held against them. But if a player wants to show up, they're vaccinated, then let them go practice. Let them get their reps in if they want to. Let them put their work in. So I expect it to kind of be a mixed bag. I think a lot of the veterans probably will stay away for a while, but we'll see. We're making really good progress right now with this pandemic. So maybe some players will feel a little bit safer and maybe they'll change their minds and come out. It's going to be fascinating to see how those OTAs unfold when the Seahawks report later this month for those. When I return to the third quarter, I'm going to be ranking my top five games on the Seahawks 2021 schedule. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of the UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. The Seahawks schedule for the 2021 season was officially released on Wednesday. It's looking like it's going to be a gauntlet, especially early in the season, as Rob Rangnight outlined yesterday, shortly after the schedule became official. The first seven games, the Seahawks are playing five teams that made the playoffs last season. The two that are on that list that didn't make the playoffs are the Vikings and the 49ers, two teams that made the playoffs in 2019 and have talented rosters. So all seven of those games are going to be very challenging. Looking at this schedule as a whole, there are a number of intriguing games. I'm going to say it right now. There were several games that I consider for the top five most intriguing games that didn't quite make the list. The Green Bay Packers in Week 10, if Aaron Rodgers is playing in that game, I'm skeptical right now that Aaron Rodgers is going to be in a Packers uniform. I think there's a pretty good chance he could force his way out of town. I think Green Bay's put themselves in a spot where they don't have a lot of leverage here. And I think Rodgers is one of those players that I could see him really forcing the issue by not showing up for training camp or even the start of the regular season. I could see him being willing to do that to get what he wants. But if he does manage to come back to Green Bay and he's under center in Week 10, then obviously that game at Lambeau Field has major playoff implications, could be an NFC Championship preview. These two teams played in the playoffs a couple years ago. So that one's honorable mention just because we don't know what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers. The 49ers in Week 4 on the road, both games against San Francisco are going to be big games. Same with the Rams in Week 15, that road contest in L.A. The Titans in Week 2, that's a playoff-tested team that's got an outstanding running game led by Derrick Henry. They've got a playmaker on the outside, A.J. Brown, who's a monster. Seeing him go against his former teammate, D.K. Metcalf, is going to be fun. That's a defense that's got some talented players as well. But those games all just missed the cut. For me, number five on my list, the number five most intriguing game on the Seahawks schedule, is Week 6 at the Pittsburgh Steelers in prime time. Really excited about this game for a couple of reasons. One, Ben Roethlisberger's had a fantastic NFL career. He's been outstanding for nearly two decades. Had kind of a rough season last year. He looks like he's at the end of the line. I expect this is the last time that we're going to see him and Russell Wilson get to play against each other. So to me, that makes this a pretty important matchup. I think you're seeing two of the better quarterbacks in the league, two guys that have won a lot of football games, have had a lot of success in the playoffs. Last time they get to compete against each other, most likely. Yet in the fact the Steelers have a very good pass rush, and that could cause problems for the Seahawks front line. It's a team that won a lot of games last year. I think Pittsburgh, if Ben Roethlisberger can bounce back a little bit, I can see Pittsburgh still being a team that can do some damage in the postseason. And so this is a tough place to play at Heinz Field. The Seahawks won there 2 years ago, but they have not had a lot of success historically playing the Steelers in Pittsburgh. So I think this is a game that's going to be a lot of fun. You've got two outstanding playoff-tested teams that are well-coached, that have quality quarterbacks, a number of weapons on the outside, good defensive players as well. I just think it's going to be a really fun primetime game in Week 6. Number four for me, all the way to the end of the season, I thought about having this a little bit higher on the list just because Week 18 at Arizona, that game could decide the NFC West with the way this division is set up. All four teams with playoff aspirations, that easily could be a game that determines who wins the division or could choose which team gets into the playoffs. between the Seahawks and Cardinals. So there's going to be major playoff implications most likely in that game. And the fact that the Seahawks have had such bad luck with injuries playing in Arizona. Last year, they choked away a 2-score lead. The Cardinals came back and won in overtime. They're going to want to get a little bit of revenge for that. And so to me, because of the playoff implications, because you're playing against a Cardinals team that has added a lot of weapons on both sides of the football, believes they're ready to compete for a division championship, and the Seahawks have had so many rough games there in Arizona, that is going to be one that I think a lot of people are going to be circling on the schedule. At number three, I might surprise some people with this one. I'm going with the season opener because I'm pretty bullish on the Indianapolis Colts. Now, I have to see what Carson Wentz does. He did not play well for the Eagles last year, was benched in favor of Jalen Hurts. So he lost his job. It's been a couple years since he was really playing at a high level at the quarterback position, but he is going to be back with Frank Reich. I like the weapons that the Colts have around him. On the outside, you've got Paris Campbell, former top pick. They also have Michael Pittman, second-year receiver out of USC. That is a big-time playmaker, came on late last season. They've got a strong running game. The front line's led by all-pro guard Quentin Nelson, Jonathan Taylor in the backfield, 1,100 yards last year. I just look at the players they've got. They've got talent on defense, too. DeForest Buckner, who used to hurt the Seahawks when he was with the 49ers, he was a first-team all-pro selection last year. They have another guy with first-team all-pro pedigree at linebacker in Darius Leonard. So this is a really talented Colts team that I think was an upgraded quarterback away from being able to push the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. If Carson Wentz is able to get his career back on track, that's going to be a team that's going to be dangerous late in the season. I think drawing them in week one could benefit the Seahawks because Wentz is still going to be getting used to his new weapons, getting back in the swing of things in Frank Reich's offense. But whenever you're scheduled to play that team, I think it's going to be a tough matchup because they're talented and well-coached. Checking in at number two on my list in week five, talked about this a little bit in the mailbag. The Seahawks have a really tough five-day stretch where they're going to be playing the 49ers as well as the Rams in back-to-back games. This Rams game in primetime is going to be a huge deal because these two teams had a classic 2 years ago on Thursday Night Football playing at Lumen Field. The Seahawks ended up winning when Greg Zuerlein pushed his field goal wide right, so they held on for that one-point victory. I expect similar shenanigans when these two teams get together again in primetime on Thursday Night Football. First time seeing Matthew Stafford going up against Russell Wilson as well. The Seahawks are going to be wanting to get a little bit of revenge after their season was ended at home by the Rams in the playoffs. They did beat the Rams at the same field only a few weeks earlier for the division title. So these teams, they play at least twice every year. There's a lot of bad blood. To me, this is the matchup of the two. Obviously, week 15 is going to be very important in LA as well. But that Thursday night game, I think, is one of the most intriguing ones on Seattle's schedule. And last but not least, week 14, staying in the division, I've been looking forward to this one. The 49ers coming back to Lumen Field. When they played last year, Jimmy Garoppolo was hurt in the middle of that game. Nick Bosa was out. They had a number of other key players that didn't play. So the Seahawks were able to take care of business. It wasn't anything like the game the year before where Jacob Hollister was stuffed to the goal line in the final minute, was just inches away from winning the NFC West for the Seahawks. I expect this game in primetime, week 14, to be very similar. Two teams that are evenly matched, play physical brands of football. And what could make this extra enticing is by that stage of the season, it's not out of the question that rookie Trey Lance could be the one under center instead of Jimmy Garoppolo. The 49ers are making it sound like they're prepared to have Lance learn for a year, let Garoppolo play. But if he struggles or if he gets hurt again, he's had durability issues, Trey Lance could easily be in the lineup by week 14. And his upside could make that offense much more difficult for the Seahawks to defend. And so it just adds another storyline to spice up one of the nastiest rivalries in football. So to me, that one has to take the cake. The number one game on my list, week 14, Seahawks 49ers at Lumen Field in primetime, has a chance to be another instant classic that may determine who wins the NFC West. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast with host Peter Bukowski as he updates you on all the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. When we return for our Blue Friday show, Nick Lee and I will be making way too early predictions for all 17 games on Seattle's schedule. We're looking forward to the debate. We'll see you then. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.